do that again because I don't want to start with Hello and welcome to Mayday, your flight podcast about everything you don't want to happen on your plane. I'm your host, Caroline Miller, and today we're going to cure your fear of flying. Just kidding, probably not.
Or make it worse.
Yeah. We're also going to talk about, you know, why 40% of the human population is affected by flight anxiety in some form. And we're also going to go over some effective strategies on how to deal with it. With me today is returning guest Drew. Hi, Drew.
Hello. It's good to be back.
Are you scared of flying or are you super duper tough and you're like, whatever, I'll live?
No, I definitely do get pretty anxious about it. Like, what? Yeah, once we're in the air, it's not too bad. But like, as soon as like, I don't know, I get freaked out by like turbulence and that sort of thing. You know, I'm definitely, I call myself like, I think I have flight anxiety. Yes.
And that's okay, because almost half the population does. What, was there a particular flight that exacerbated your flight anxiety, or have you just always been kind of an anxious flyer?
No, to be honest, it wasn't until I got older, and I think just becoming a little more aware of just sort of like, I don't know, the real world and like, you know, things happen. That's when I was saying it's more just me being like in engineering school and just realizing like, oh, okay, like, you know, I know things happen and things fail, even though things are designed really well. And not that that means that anything's ever happened. I think I'm just more maybe tuned into what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, when we're going to talk about that exact thing later, how people can develop anxiety about it when they get older. So that's a perfect segue into what we're going to talk about later on. Yeah, but I was the same way. I really didn't have a fear of flying at all until COVID. And that was like when everybody had to wear a mask. And something about wearing the mask made me so nauseous. And so every single flight I would go on, I would feel so nauseous and terrible. But it's okay. It's fine. Everything's good.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's fine. But part of the reason I'm doing this episode today is that we're only 3 weeks into 2023. And it's already been a terrible year for aviation.
Because,
you know, the whole year started off badly because Southwest, like, soiled itself and it stranded thousands of people all over the country because Southwest didn't update their scheduling software for 20 years and most people's holiday flights got canceled over and over and over again. And then, like, you know, 2 weeks later, the FAA got the same treatment when they soiled themselves too because they had a mass failure because they hadn't upgraded their software in 30 years either for certain obstacle detection things that pilots use when they're in the air. And then they grounded every single plane in the United States because they screwed up so bad. And then a Delta plane and an American plane almost smashed into each other at JFK like last week during the Delta plane's takeoff roll, because the American plane didn't follow ATC taxiing instructions correctly.
Whoa.
Yeah, had you heard of that before?
No, I hadn't. That was just this last week.
Yeah, that was just this last week. A listener who does an awesome job of keeping me up to date with news sent me a link to the news story, and I was just like, oh my god. And the funny thing, well, it wasn't funny, it sucked for everybody on the Delta plane, but the Delta aircraft, the pilots did nothing wrong. They followed the instructions. It was the American pilots that made the mistake, but the American flight went off without a hitch and even landed at their destination a few minutes early, but the Delta flight that didn't do anything wrong got canceled.
Oh no!
I know, man. I felt so bad for everybody on that Delta plane. I can picture the pilot getting on the you know, speaker and being like, I'm sorry to say that we're gonna have to cancel our flight today. Some other pilots made some mistakes. Sorry about that. We'll have you at the gate shortly. Click.
Yeah.
But, and then on a more serious note, last week, a passenger plane in Nepal crashed. And what's more is that you can watch a firsthand account from a live stream that a now deceased passenger was taking. Like, he started taking it right before the crash. And so it covers the last normal moments of the flight. And then suddenly you see the wing tilt downward really hard. And then the screams and the chaos happens when the crash is actively happening. And then after all the noise goes away, you see the fiery aftermath of the crash from inside the plane because the phone survived the crash. None of the people in the plane survived, but the phone survived the crash and kept live streaming. Now, for the first time in history, you can go on the internet and watch a found footage video of a plane crash where everyone dies. And I really would not recommend that anybody listening watches that video for what it's worth. It's really disturbing, and I wish I could unwatch it. It's really terrible. And one of the pilots on that flight was a woman who herself became a pilot because her husband was a pilot, and he died in a plane crash for the same airline. So if, for everybody out there who may have known somebody in the Nepal crash, like, the entire world is thinking of you guys, and, you know, let's do an investigation into that airline. I think it was Yeti Airlines. So let's do a thorough investigation into them and their really bad practices that led to all of these crashes that they've caused. And we might do a follow-up episode on Nepal airplane crashes in general, because they have a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot for such a small country. So, oh, that's all the bad things that have happened in 2023 so far, and the day we record this is January 22nd, so great start.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yes, pretty rough. If you're listening and you already have flight anxiety, like both me and Drew already have, or if you are somebody who has a legitimate phobia of flying, this is probably all very difficult to deal with. And if you didn't have flight anxiety before, it might be creeping in, considering that you can watch a video of a plane crash on the internet. And if you don't have flight anxiety at all and you feel like, you know, you're immune mentally to all of the spooky things happening, which if you are immune to it, good for you. But chances are that somebody close to you does have flight anxiety. So it is good to know, how do I help someone close to me? Which is another part of what we're going to cover in this episode. So today we are going to discuss, what is flight anxiety versus a flight phobia? Why are we so scared of flying? And most importantly, how do you avoid losing your shit in the sky? Let's kick things off by acknowledging the obvious, and that is flying is scary because all the laws of nature were like, hey, humans, don't fly. That's for birds, not you. You have floppy, heavy limbs and a weirdly large head. Stay on the ground. And humans were like, oh, yeah? Watch me, I'm gonna build a flying machine.
Screw you, nature, I do what I want.
Yeah, I do what I want. We're literally defying the laws of nature by flying. And because of this, our brains flip out when we look out the window, and the little, you know, primal ape part of us goes, no thank you, this is very scary, I should not be up here. And then we have bumps and turbulence, and our plane goes, super duper no thank you, I really hate this. And Drew, you said that you also have those feelings about turbulence.
Yeah, for sure.
And then on top of all of that, we have no control over the plane, because your life, as well as everybody else's life, is completely in the hands of two people who you've never even met before. And again, ape brain goes, very much no thank you, I hate everything and I'm scared. And all of this is to say that any level of flight anxiety is perfectly understandable, it's very common, and if you have flight anxiety, it doesn't mean that you're, like, quote-unquote weaker mentally or anything. It just means that you're a regular person, and a lot of people have flight anxiety. People act cool on planes, but in reality, almost half the people on your flight are some level of flipped out once you're all sealed inside the sky sausage and you start going out onto the runway.
Right. You're like, oh god, I'm committed now. I'm going to fly hundreds of miles an hour through the sky in a giant metal tube.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to do this. I'm scared. And so now that we've kind of established, obviously, why we don't like it, let's make the distinguish between flight anxiety and a flight phobia, because those are very, very different things. Flight anxiety is more of a controllable but very unpleasant part of flight for many people, but you can deal with it on your own even if it makes things stressful for you. Like, you're not going to cancel your flight if you just have flight anxiety. A flight phobia or aerophobia, which is how we're going to refer to it for the rest of the episode, is aerophobia. That is flight anxiety on nightmare mode. It is a diagnosable anxiety disorder. Aerophobia is a completely uncontrollable experience that is so bad and difficult to deal with that it interferes with someone's ability to travel via aircraft, period. Like, you might cancel a trip to see family. You might not be able to travel for work. It impacts your personal and professional life, and it's completely uncontrollable.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, somebody with aerophobia might think something like, if I get on that plane, I will have a panic attack, first of all. It is going to happen. If mm-hmm. I might even have a panic attack in the airport. And if I get on that plane, it's going to go down. And if it doesn't go down, I'm probably going to throw up or something and humiliate myself. And if it doesn't go down and I don't throw up, it's probably going to be a super turbulent flight where I split my forehead open like that Hawaiian flight a few weeks ago, and then I'll never be able to fly again. And then what if I have a mental breakdown and somebody takes a video of it, and then I get put on the no-fly list, and then my boss sees the video, and then I lose my job? I cannot get on this plane. I just can't. If I get on that plane, my life is over, and I'm canceling my flight, and I'm staying in my house forever. Like, that is, like, it's a next-level fear yeah. of the plane and of yeah. the process.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, that'd be rough. I mean, it's understandable, though. I mean, it's like, there's a lot of variables in flight, and it can be very spooky.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And, like, we'll get into all the different things that can, you know, trigger somebody's flight anxiety. Not flight anxiety. Well, that too, but more specifically a flight phobia, because there's a lot of different things that can set it off. But before we get to more about flight phobia, aerophobia,
mm-hmm.
for most of the people listening, you know, we just have run-of-the-mill flight anxiety. So let's spend a minute talking about flight anxiety and how we can deal with it. Because, again, for most of the people listening, they're lucky enough to not have a flight phobia. It's just flight anxiety, which still really, really sucks. So, for example, a thought for flight anxiety could be something along the lines of, I know that everything is going to be okay on this flight, but it still makes me anxious, and I can't wait for it to be over. And then you might have an intrusive thought like, oh my gosh, like what if the turbulence is terrible and I get hurt? Or, you know, what if the pilot's crazy? And then you catch yourself, you're like, wait, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gonna be fine. But you can catch yourself and you can stop the spiraling out if you just yeah. have flight anxiety.
Right,
so,
for sure.
Yeah, so it's manageable. But it's terrible, and it's not fun. So here's some ways to manage standard flight anxiety. The first thing to remember, because turbulence is the most common cause of flight anxiety, just like you, Drew, and I also hate it. So the first thing to remember is that no plane in the history of everything ever has ever crashed from turbulence, full stop.
Oh.
If you want to learn more about turbulence, we have an entire episode about it. It's a good one. And in general, most turbulence is nothing to worry about, despite what you see on the news. Because remember that when you see a flight in the news, like that Hawaiian flight where everybody got their face busted open, remember that for that one flight, there were literally thousands of other flights that happened that day where everybody was fine. And worst case, if the turbulence does get wild, it might be very scary, but planes are designed to withstand tremendous amounts of turbulence, which is why that Hawaiian flight didn't crash. And
mm-hmm.
when you're looking at pictures and videos from that plane, your first thought is, oh my god, that looks horrifying. But if you look at it from the standpoint of, wow, look at all of the damage that that plane and those people can take without anybody dying and without the plane even coming close to crashing. Like, that mm-hmm. turbulence was so bad that people needed stitches, and the ceiling of the cabin was broken by flying personal items, and that plane still didn't crash. Like, things can get super crazy, and you won't crash and die.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, the vast majority of the time, you are never going to encounter turbulence like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do encounter turbulence, I tend to think of it like a roller coaster, which sounds stupid, but I have a reason. Because the reason that people like roller coasters is that roller coasters are kind of scary and you don't have any control over it. But the reason it's fun is because you can get an adrenaline rush knowing mm-hmm. that you're safe and that you're not gonna, you know, fly off the tracks. That's why right. we like it, is because we know it's safe and it's also scary. So it's controlled mm-hmm. fear. And in fact, you are more likely to die on a roller coaster than die from turbulence on a plane. So next time you're on a plane and the pilot says, like, oh, we're going to have some turbulence, you could think about it like it's a roller coaster, because it's even safer than a roller coaster. You know, you could even put your arms up and go, wee!
Yeah.
The person next to you might not like that, but...
it's just a bonus roller coaster. Yeah, it is weird how it's like, I don't know. I mean, I guess you can make an analogy to driving, where, like, driving is way more dangerous. I don't know the statistics are exactly, but I'm sure you're many, many, many times more likely to get killed driving, like, you know, on a daily basis than you are taking a flight somewhere. But it just feels like it just feels so much more unnatural to fly, and there's so much less control that you're just like, well, yep, this is it.
Yeah, but remember, next time you encounter turbulence, that you are going to be fine, and the turbulence will end, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Another really effective way to manage flight anxiety is to, in general, learn about how planes work and learn about the Swiss cheese model and how planes are engineered. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know a lot about planes, so I won't stress this one too much. If this is your first episode and you're listening to it because you struggle with flight anxiety or flight phobia, I would recommend the Gimli Glider series that we did, because that flight went through some crazy stuff and everybody still landed fine. And the only person that got hurt was somebody who broke their ankle getting out of the plane after it landed. Because there's a backup system for the backup system for the backup system in case the primary system fails.
Right.
Number three, if you're on a long flight, talk with your doctor about maybe taking some sort of sleeping pill or an anti-anxiety med or a sedative. People with flight anxiety often struggle to sleep on transoceanic flights, like me, and that makes jet lag really bad.
Yeah.
So sleeping pills are your friend, but always check with your doctor first to make sure you're not allergic to anything, and of course to make sure it doesn't cross-interact with any of your pre-existing prescriptions. And then number four for flight anxiety, and this is the last big tip, you know, pick a seat that eases whatever kind of anxiety you have. For me, I like having a window seat because I like being able to see the ground and know that we're not over the ocean.
Right.
I have this fear that I'll be flying from, like, Denver to Chicago, and then I'll look out the window and see that we're over the ocean.
You're like, wait, this doesn't seem right.
This doesn't seem right. But if you're somebody who is scared of, you know, how closed off the space is, the aisle seat might be good because it's the most spacious one and you have easy access to the bathroom. So pick a seat that works for you. So now that we've covered flight anxiety, which is more common, let's do a deeper dive on aerophobia, because there is a misconception that people who suffer from aerophobia are just afraid of the plane crashing, which may be true for some people, but there are a lot of people who aren't scared of the plane crashing, but they're really scared of other aspects of the flight. Like, mm-hmm. some people are so terrified of turbulence alone that they develop aerophobia, and no matter how many times you tell them the statistics, it won't reassure them, because mm-hmm. that part of their brain just totally consumes the logic part of their brain. Mm-hmm. And other people are worried about potentially getting locked inside the plane. Mm-hmm. Some people are scared of the opposite, which is someone opening the exit door mid-flight, which people have tried to do, and it won't open. It's physically impossible to do so. But again, if you have a flight phobia, like, it doesn't matter. It still feels life or death to you.
Right, yeah.
And other people are scared of bombings, hijackings, suicide pilots, like, anything you can think of, somebody with aerophobia that can control their life.
Mm-hmm.
And a key aspect of having a phobia, you know, I already said it, but I just want to reemphasize this, is that logically knowing that your fears are irrational doesn't help. Mm-hmm. And it's not because you're, like, stupid or something. It's just that your brain is so overtaken by anxiety that nothing can help you. Like, mm-hmm. no words that somebody just off the street tells you, no statistics, no reassurance from somebody that's not a doctor, nothing can help, because you're just so scared. And people with aerophobia also get physical symptoms because they're so scared. Like, they might break out in sweat. They could get nauseous. They could get sick. They could hyperventilate. They could pass out, shake, have shortness of breath. They could get chills. They could get dizzy. Or they could even have heart palpitations, which is just dangerous. And it's a really horrible thing to have to go through. And some people who suffer from aerophobia have it so bad that they experience symptoms of their phobia, even if they watch a movie or a TV show that has a plane crash in it, even though it's fictional. Like, you know, if somebody is watching Castaway and is somehow not aware that it starts with the plane crash and they have aerophobia, they might have a reaction to it and be really scared. And so because of this, if you have really bad aerophobia, not only are you unable to travel for work or your family or vacation or anything, but you, if you're watching a new movie or a TV show, you might have to look up, like, is there a plane in this? Is there a plane crash in this? It just consumes your life.
Right.
You know, and it's not their fault. Like, they're a victim of a anxiety disorder that they didn't ask for. It just really sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be super rough. Especially like today's society where it's just kind of expected, like, oh yeah, you can just go fly here, right? Like, that'd be pretty, that'd make it hard.
Yeah, totally. And like, for some people, it's not like you're born with aerophobia. You can develop aerophobia at any time. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're listening right now and you don't have it, you might develop it later on. Hooray! And for example, if you're a business person who flies a lot for work, you might have a really traumatic flight that scared you so bad that you develop aerophobia, and suddenly now you have a really hard time with work. It's a very difficult phobia to have to endure.
Is it usually triggered by some sort of event, like a really like intense flight or something like that? Or can it just kind of come about for other reasons?
It can come about for other reasons. It's most common for people to develop it between 17 and 35. I mean, it can develop at any age if you have a bad enough flight, but sometimes people develop aerophobia in that age bracket because there's a lot of big milestones that usually happen between 17 and 35, like going to college, getting married, having children, because you have a heightened awareness of the fact that you can die. Like, you're not a child anymore. You have the awareness of your mortality. And now suddenly you have a lot more responsibility that you didn't have previously. And so you feel like there's more at stake. And like, if you, you know, were in a hijacking, or if you'd somehow died in a plane related incident, you're like, well, what would happen to my kids? What would happen to my spouse? What would, like, just what would happen? And so suddenly you feel like you can't afford to die.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, your mortality becomes a lot more real and the ramifications of it.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for some people, they might not have a terrible flight, but like, if you have a baby, suddenly your next flight might seem really scary, especially if you have your baby with you.
Right, yeah. Yeah, especially when it's like you don't have that level of control. Like you said, it's like you're basically entrusting your entire family's lives into someone's hands that you don't really know at all.
And even if you do know the pilot, like, I don't think I would even want to get on a plane where I knew the pilot, because I'd be like, what if they're distracted because they know I'm on the plane?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's sometimes it's probably better just going into it not knowing anything about the pilots.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I trust that you won't fuck it up because I don't know anything to tell me otherwise. Another thing, in addition to having a bad flight or having a big life change that makes you rethink your, you know, personal quote-unquote value, even though everybody is indispensable and priceless. Another thing that puts people at risk for developing aerophobia is having another phobia that is worsened in a plane. So for example, emetophobia, or the fear of vomit or vomiting, can trigger aerophobia because people throw up on planes.
Oh, right.
Like, it happens, you know, it doesn't happen often, but it's a common enough occurrence that there's a barf bag in the back seat pocket of every seat on every plane for this reason.
Yeah.
And as you know, like, I had a really bad case of emetophobia for like over a decade when Drew and I were children, and even a little bit when I was a teenager. So I have experience with this. Like, if I threw up, or if somebody around me threw up, I literally felt like I was going to die or they were going to die. Like, we went to see Spirited Away in 2002. Oh, yeah, gosh, and yeah. If you've seen Spirited Away, you know.
It's a rough one.
That's such a weird movie. It's so good, but, like, it's not for kids.
Also, if you don't like vomiting, it's also really not good.
No, it's terrible. Spoiler alert, at the end of Spirited Away, this character called No Face vomits for like a minute straight, and he vomits up everything he's eaten in the whole movie. And I got so scared that I had to leave the theater with, I don't even remember which one of our parents came with me, but, you know, one of our parents left the theater with me because I was so flipped out.
I can't remember if it was mom or dad.
I can't remember. I think it might have been dad.
I think it was.
Because I think mom was like, you'll handle it. And he was probably like, yeah, I got this. I'm an engineer. And so, you know, back to planes. Because I had this intense fear of vomiting, I didn't develop aerophobia, luckily, but flying was difficult for me because I was terrified that I or somebody close to me would throw up on the plane. And that was scary because, you know, usually if somebody threw up near me, I would just run away. But you can't run away on the plane because it's tiny, and sometimes you can't run away even if you want to, because if there's turbulence, you can't stand up, you can't get out of your seat. And if you're landing or taking off, you also can't get out of your seat. And so it was just scary. And so, And that brings me to another common trigger of aerophobia, which is claustrophobia, because planes are tiny.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's times when you can't move.
Yeah, especially if you're like a tall person, I can imagine it's like especially bad, because then it's like your legs are kind of, you're like trapped in a kind of like crunched position and you can't really move. And yeah, especially if you're like near a window or something, and it's like there's like no escape.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you read my mind. Literally the next sentence in my notes is, especially if you are a taller and or larger person, it's kind of unbearable because your knees are probably touching the seat in front of you, or like your whole body is taking up the seat, and like the arms could be digging into your sides, and like this can also get especially bad if you're in the plane for a longer period of time than you anticipate, because like if there's a diversion, or if you're circling, or if you're sitting on the tarmac for an extended period of time for any reason, that could get really scary for you. So that could trigger aerophobia. Obviously, if you have acrophobia, which is the fear of heights, then flying is like really difficult, and the window seat is not your friend
at all. Yeah, seriously. Or when they get on the intercom, they're like, all right, well, now they've reached I forget what the like cruising altitude usually is, but it's really high up there. You're like, oh no.
Yeah, we've now reached an altitude of 38,000 feet, and some poor person is just like,
how many feet?
I know. No, I can't. Like, we joke, but if you do have a phobia of heights and you have to fly somewhere for something really important, I don't know, your brother's wedding or something, then that would be a really difficult thing to have to go through, and it could be traumatic for you. So I'm laughing, but if you have acrophobia and aerophobia, I'm not laughing at you. You're a very strong person, and I'm really sorry that you have to deal with that. Another thing that I didn't really think about, but it does make sense, is that if you have pyrophobia or a fear of fire, planes can also be difficult for you because there's a number of planes that have crashed related to fire. In particular, Air Canada 797 is especially scary for people with pyrophobia and aerophobia because Air Canada 797 had a fire breakout in the bathroom, and they did safely do an emergency landing in Cincinnati. But people got trapped in the aisles because everybody was trying to escape at the same time. God. And the fire spread really quickly, and half the people on board were burned to death inside the plane sitting on the tarmac. So,
oh my God,
that's horrifying. Also, Swiss Air 111, a fire happened while they were in the air, and the fire got so bad that it brought down the plane in midair. That's also very scary.
Yeah.
And last, but certainly not least, especially in the COVID era, people with misophobia, which is the fear of germs, also can develop aerophobia quite easily. Because, you know, nothing says bacteria and viruses like a small room full of strangers and shared surfaces.
Yeah.
Like, I got COVID on a plane back from London a few months ago, and that really sucked.
No, it's rough. I mean, like, there's like a couple of flights I took were like, or kind of the post-COVID era, or even during COVID, I guess, like, you know, there'd be someone like packing a row behind us or something. And like, oh my God, this is it. I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like all I could think of the entire flight.
Yeah, exactly. Like somebody with a wet cough on a plane. Nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. Yeah. Poor Drew has two sets of headphones on because one of them doesn't work for audio inputs.
Yes, we had some Bluetooth shenanigans trying to get my mic and headset all set up, and this ultimately ended up being the only solution. But hey, it works.
Yeah, it does work. So right now Drew has a set of headphones on over one ear, and then he's holding up another headphone from a second set over his ear.
I'm so cool.
Yeah,
I look like so a DJ cool. Or something. Just call me DJ Drew.
Yeah, actually, you do look like a DJ, a podcast DJ.
DJ Drew Dog.
DJ Drew.
Would that be my DJ name? I don't know. It's not very original. I'll keep thinking.
I like DJ Drew Dog. Anyway, people are like, "This isn't about playing." Shut up. Anyway,
yeah, this is diverted quite a bit. Get it? Diverted. Okay. Anyways, I'm done now. Okay, continue.
The good news is that most people with aerophobia can and do overcome it with help from their doctor. So if you've ever had to cancel a trip or if you've had a panic attack because of your flight and how scared you are, it is probably time to contact your doctor about it because you shouldn't have to live like that. There are many approaches to overcoming aerophobia, but the most common and effective approach is cognitive behavioral therapy. This can be done in an individual or a group setting, and sometimes you'll even be able to go into a flight simulator to put your skills to the test, which gives you an opportunity to safely put what you've learned into a context without actually being in a plane.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, for those of you who have seen the movie French Kiss, which is like this great 90s movie with a protagonist who has a terrible fear of flying, but her husband cheats on her in Paris, and she's like, I have to fly to Paris from Canada. And then she gets over it. The movie opens with her in a flight sim trying to get over her fear of flying, and she doesn't. And she runs out of the flight simulator. And you think it's a real plane, but it's just a flight simulator. Anyway.
Whoa.
Another side tangent. I'm sorry. So, if you know someone with aerophobia, it is important to be sympathetic to their situation, because remember that whatever frustration or confusion that you are experiencing when you're traveling with them, they also don't want to be that scared. Like, it's not like they're choosing to do that. Most people with a phobia of any kind would give anything to have that phobia go away, because, you know, it's something that happens to you. It makes life really difficult, and especially with flight, it can really feel like a life or death situation whenever they have a ticket booked on a plane. So just be nice to them, be patient, and just keep reminding them that they'll be safe, even if they keep saying like, no, 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 like, you don't understand. Just keep saying like, it's gonna be safe, like, we'll be fine. And even with the best intentions, if you don't have flight anxiety or aerophobia, sometimes you'll accidentally say things that aren't the right things to say. So, you know, saying things like, oh, it's not that bad, like, you know, you're being silly, or, well, you know, you're more likely to die in the car ride over, right? Or, why are you so freaked out? Or, there's no reason to be this upset, it's okay. Like, even though you're trying to help, those types of statements are just going to make the person feel guilty about being upset, and that's just going to compound upon it. Just be patient with them, remind them that they'll be okay, and if they haven't sought professional help about it, do encourage them to seek help if it is interfering with their day-to-day life. Yeah, but what are your thoughts on this, Drew?
I'm trying to collect my thoughts. It's like a tricky thing, because it's, yeah, you don't want to, I mean, I don't know. I guess like I said earlier, like as I've gotten older, I think I've become more anxious about flying. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, like you said, it's like, it feels kind of unnatural, like flying. And so I think it's just a unusual situation. And I think it's natural to kind of immediately jump to like, or immediately think of all the things that can go wrong, because you're already in a scenario that's kind of like scary. if I'm scared, why am I scared? And then you think through all the reasons that you're scared. You're like, oh man, there's a lot of good reasons for me to be scared right now.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, if you're like me, your brain starts playing highlight reel of all the plane crashes that have ever happened ever and why they happened and why can't they happen to you right now?
Right. But I mean, I guess, I don't know, at least for me, what helps is like, I mean, thinking kind of like about the statistics behind it where, you know, I think he said this time at the Hawaii flight where it, you know, like there are so many flights every day, like thousands, I don't even know how many there are total, but it's like, you know, if you think about it from a statistics perspective, like the chances of anything going wrong, even if something as crazy as like that really intense turbulence in that Hawaii flight, like, you know, that was a big enough and rare enough occurrence that it made national news. You know, and I don't know, and like I never heard anything about something like that before, you know, and like that was in my 30 years of being alive. That's a, well, I'm, I don't know. I'm sorry, I'm talking about just through my narrow scope of observation. But my point is, it's even for a non-fatal, really crazy thing like that, the chances of it happening are like minute, let alone something happening that's bad enough that would cause like a, you know, a fatal crash or is, or even, smaller. At least for me, that's what happened. It helps me and like just kind of keep myself occupied. I think that for me, like I just always bring like a book or a movie or something to keep me occupied, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
It's hard too when you're in the air and you think, you know, if something does happen, there's not a lot of room for error.
Yeah.
But also, you know, going back to what I said earlier, it's if those things were going to happen, they would happen frequently enough that you would hear about them. You know, it wouldn't be like a rare, unusual thing on the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the powers that be like are so aware of these possibilities that like there are just so many fail safes and like there's so many checks and balances. You know, these huge airlines, you know, there's like they have a lot of incentive in making sure nothing goes wrong. You know, like if something happens, your plane goes down like that. I mean, I don't know exactly how it works, but that could be the end of that industry. And there aren't like a whole lot of airlines in the world. And so money and is probably one of the bigger motivators on earth. And there's a lot of money in airlines. And so they're going to do everything in their power to make sure nothing goes wrong.
It's funny that you brought up money because that's something that comes up a lot on this podcast in a negative way. A lot of accidents, when they do happen, it's because an airline cut costs. But at the end of the day, an airline especially knows that one crash can ruin the whole airline. Yeah. And it has many, many times, especially if you have like even slightly thin profit margins. If you have a fatal crash where everybody dies, people aren't going to book your airlines. And we've seen that happen many times. Mm-hmm. Swiss Air, gone. Pan Am, gone. Aero Peru, gone. Air Florida, gone. So many airlines had a bad crash that totally fucks them over, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Boeing, they had two plane crashes, like they were both awful, and they, but it only took two plane crashes for them to lose $60 billion in revenue. And they've never financially recovered. And, you know, we just covered that in our last episode, so I won't be a broken record. But, you know, even though there's been crashes that have been financially rooted, there's way more flights that are safe also for financial reasons. You know, there are going to be those flights that are complete nightmare fuel, like Aero Peru, where a guy put on duct tape, just one guy put on a piece of duct tape, and then it killed everybody. But remember that it's 2023.
Mm-hmm.
These planes, 99.99% of them, are built with the lessons from every plane crash in history built into them. Now is the safest time to travel by air ever. So there are lots of reasons why flight anxiety is understandable, but there's way more reasons to remember why your flight anxiety doesn't mean you should be worried, but it totally makes sense why you are.
Right.
Well, that is all I have for aerophobia and flight anxiety for today. I hope this didn't make you more anxious. The point of this was to make you less anxious, but in hindsight, I'm not sure if that's what it did.
Well, no, but it's good to like understand these things. I mean, it, you know, I don't know. I think there's definitely a lot of power in like understanding where these things come from, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If you haven't already, please rate and or review the show, unless you hate it, in which case, why did you make it all the way to the end of this episode? You have to like at least a little bit if you got here. I like you because you listened to the whole thing. Anyway, if you have any flight phobia stories of your own, flight anxiety stories, flight suggestions or, you know, general corrections about anything, please send them to maydaymaydaypod@gmail.com. Until next time, be safe, take a deep breath, and don't drink too much coffee or you'll get sweaty and anxious. Bye-bye.
Everything will be just fine.
You're gonna be okay.